Welcome back to the Feminist Book Club podcast, a show for dangerous, well-read women. Each week, we explore literature and media through a feminist lens as one small way to reclaim our time, our books, and our stories. Let's get started. Hello, everyone. Renee Powers here, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of Feminist Book Club. I hope you're settling into the cozy, festive spirit of this time of year and that my voice is accompanying you on maybe a long drive to visit someone you love or a long walk to get out of their house while you're visiting someone you love. Tis the season. But in all seriousness, thank you to everyone who supported Feminist Book Club this holiday season. Whether you purchased a previous box for yourself during our Cyber Week sales or a gift subscription for a friend, I have personally packed every order that came through this week and sent them off with lots of love and tons of good energy. It was so, so nice to see those orders. Our holiday deals are still going strong just for the next few days, so head on over to feministbookclub.com/shop to check them out. And for those of you listening a little later in the month, if you're not caught up on your podcast listening in real time, gift subscriptions are always available, and we'll send you a printable certificate to let the recipient know that they'll be receiving a box in the mail soon. You could print it and give it to them. You can forward it to them. It's up to you. So even if you're a last-minute shopper, we've got something just for you. I also wanted to draw your attention to the Doe Daily Deal. If you're not familiar with Doe, they are a platform to discover and shop hundreds of woman-owned businesses. They recognize that it'll take years for the pay gap to close from the top down, but by directing our dollars to incredible women, we're helping women rise by creating change from the bottom up. And you know that is one of our tenets of our business as well here at Feminist Book Club. Every day, Doe is sharing a flash sale from a woman-owned company. So mark your calendars for December 11th. We will have an exclusive Doe Feminist Book Club box available for our lowest price yet. And quantities will be very, very limited. So make sure that you're signed up for our email list. We'll share it there. And get on Doe's email list too for great deals every single day. It's an amazing way to support woman-owned businesses. You can find that at joindoe.com and joindoe on Instagram, and that's dough like pizza dough, D-O-U-G-H. Just a heads up, we will be taking a break over the holidays, so there will be no episodes the week of Christmas and the week of New Year's. So two more episodes after this, and then you won't hear from us until January 9th. I know, I'm going to miss you too, but we'll be back bright, shiny, and well-rested after the holidays, after the new year, with some really, really, really exciting guests. And you know, I realize I just said two more episodes, but I've got a bonus episode coming at the end of the year. It will be my best books of the year, my top picks, everything I loved this year. Mostly new releases. We'll do some honorable mentions of things I read this year that weren't released in 2019. You can get a sneak preview over on Goodreads. But at the end of the year, I will be sharing all of my favorite books, and then we'll go on our short break. So today's interview, though, is with the author of Math Hacks, Vanessa Vaccaria, who's also known as the Math Guru. I know a kid's book about math seems like maybe an odd fit for the show, but I have a feeling Vanessa is about to change your mind. Plus, she cracks my ass up. Our podcast editor, Phelan, sent me a text after she edited this interview, and I have to read it to you. Phelan said, "This episode with Vanessa is my all-time favorite. The conversation is fun and intriguing, and I was dying of laughter the entire time." So even if you don't believe me that an interview about math can be fun, try to believe Phelan instead. Plus, at the end of the chat, we take a hard left turn into our mutual fascination of cults. This conversation is full of surprises. So stay tuned. Welcome back, everyone. I'm so excited. I'm sitting down with Vanessa Vaccaria today. Vanessa is the founder and director of The Math Guru, which is a super cool boutique and math and science tutoring studio in Toronto. She is also the author of Math Hacks, which is a new book that makes math totally fun, stress-free, and relatable for young kids and parents And she's the host of the brand new podcast called Math Therapy, where she helps guests work through their math trauma. Yes, yes, I have math trauma. One problem at a time. And this, I love this. You have this, like, the best bio, by the way. Her hashtag goals are to be the Lady Gaga, or to be Lady Gaga famous, and to totally change math culture so that STEM is finally as cool and accessible as basically every Taylor Swift song ever. She failed grade 11 math twice, which was the best thing to ever happen to her. Side note, totally relevant though, Vanessa is a founding member of the Toronto Indie Rock band Goodnight Sunrise. Mindy Kaling is her idol, and Vanessa believes that she should be yours too. She is, so we're going to get along just fine. Welcome, Vanessa.
Yeah.
So yes, that is the best bio I have ever received.
I've worked on it. I've like honed it, and I'm always like, yeah, I feel like I'm not great at writing bios, so that is a very big compliment.
Oh, well, we're already getting off on the, I'm talking about writing as a craft. Yeah. bio writing as a craft. So before we start, what is your definition of feminism?
Honestly, feminism to me just believes or means like you believe in equal rights for everyone. Like that's my definition of feminism, is like you believe in equality for everyone. Cool.
Yep. Easy. Okay. It seems simple. It's not, but
that's why whenever anyone's like, I'm not a feminist, I'm like, oh, cool. Like, do you believe in equal rights though? Cool. Then you're a feminist. Great. I'm like, if anyone's like, no, I'm like, really though? Cool. Defriend. No one's ever said no to me, honestly. Right.
So this seems, maybe to our listeners, this may seem a little out of left field. Like, why is the math guru on the Feminist Book Club podcast?
Yeah.
Because I think that there's so much, first off, you wrote this book, Math Hacks. Yes, it's for kids. It's a little unusual for what we do, but you and I have had some conversations that I think everybody needs to listen to and everybody needs to be having. And it's that this math trauma that you speak of is a feminist issue.
Absolutely. Couldn't have said it better. That's exactly it.
And you are trying to remedy that through your tutoring, through your book, through your master's thesis, which I didn't read all the way, but I did skim.
It's long.
Which brought together feminism, math education, and like cultural studies. It's fascinating. And marketing. It's so good. So tell me about, let's start at the writing portion. Tell me why you wrote Math Hacks. Subtitle, cool tips plus less stress equals better marks, which we can tell is Canadian because we don't say the word marks, but you know.
Anyway. Yeah, what do you say?
We say grades.
Oh, grades. Okay. I mean, yes. We say grades too. I just want to, yeah, all right. No, we're not that different.
That's a very Canadian thing to know for us.
I love that you start with this because I think this is so important to set the tone, because I often get asked this. And in fact, when I started my thesis and I was like, I want to do my thesis in math education and feminist studies, everyone was like, what are you talking about? And I was like, to me, it is 100% a feminist issue, because the fact is that the population that is most affected by math trauma or by the myth of ability, it's women. So women have historically been told that they are not innately able to do math. It is a masculinized subject. I've done so much research on this and it's fucking fascinating. But I also think when any woman thinks about it, they're like, oh my God. So I wrote Math Hacks because I was asked to, quite frankly. Like Scholastic approached me and was like, will you write a math book for kids? Now, I am more of a high school tutor and like an adult, like motivational speaker. But I was like, absolutely, because studies have shown that as early as 6 years old, girls get the idea that they can't do math. They are taught in school already. There's such fucked up research that you wouldn't even think about like teachers, for example, like when they walk down rows of a classroom and they're looking at notes, they will just subconsciously compliment girls on like the prettiness and tidiness of their notes, and then compliment boys on like the problem solving and work. So girls are taught, right? Like they're taught implicitly that they're not capable of doing math. So when I wrote the book Math Hacks, the whole idea was accessibility. Now, if you've seen Math Hacks, it's not just a math book. It's like the first math book that like a quarter of the book is all motivational. It's pep talks, it's tips, it's like anti-anxiety. It's designed to take a holistic approach to set the stage for any kid, not just girls, but any kid, that like, of course you're capable. It's all about mindset. And then the concepts are explained in a way that, well, I always say anyone can understand, because part of it it is an accessibility issue. We make math inaccessible, right? And our education system, like, I'm not going to go on a whole rant about it now, but it is only accessible to a certain percentage of the population. So we have to remember who designed that system, white males. We have to, you know, like, we have to remember all that stuff, and most of it has not changed. So that, you know, I started with Math Hacks as kind of a simple in to let's get these kids while they're young, changing the way they perceive themselves as learners of math.
Oh, it's so good. I mentioned to you right before we started recording that I had to take Algebra 1 twice. I dropped out, or Algebra 2 twice, and then I dropped out of pre-calc and I got a D in geometry. And I was told from a very young age, I was very good at writing. I was very good. I was a fast reader. I was good at science. But my mom always told me, well, I wasn't very good at math. I always got D's in math. It wasn't that big of a deal. Like, if you can't do math, it's fine. And I don't know if it was necessarily that I wasn't good at it, or if it was a free pass to not be great at something for once.
Well, and that's a really important distinction.
Yeah.
And we won't talk about it at this second, but that is what my podcast is about, is for all the people out there who say I'm bad at math. When you really unpack all the experiences, most of the time there is nothing that shows that they're bad at math.
Yeah.
Like, and here's not a free pass. Like, maybe you didn't try that hard. You were taught that you shouldn't even bother. Like, none of those things mean you're bad at math.
Exactly. And here's the thing. I love foreign languages. And I think it's because, to me, it's like a secret code. And if you reframe, if I would have had that kind of reframe of math, math is a secret code too.
Oh, totally.
I think I would have been really good at it, and I really would have liked it. When I finally got the hang of, like, algebra, it was kind of fun.
Yeah. You're into foreign languages, like, math is a language.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And I love music, and I was, you know, really into music theory as a kid. And, like, yeah, there's so much that I could have, I don't know, could have grasped onto as a young girl that I just didn't bother, or I was told that it wasn't for me. And yeah. So I love this book. I've got a copy of it here. You sent me a copy, and it's more than, like you said, it's more than just like how to do math. It's pep talks. I mean, there's a lot of like comic booky art to it. It's colorful. It's cute. It's really easy to read. It has so much personality. Why did you choose to write these topics? Were there things that Scholastic was like, you need to hit X, Y, and Z, or are there things that you chose to, you know, include over other things? What was the writing process like?
So my whole theory in writing this was to pick the topics that are always the sore points, not just for kids, but for adults. So actually, like, a ton of adults have bought this book because, for example, like, one of the topics is percentages. And as an adult, quite frankly, you are faced with percentages all the time. Okay, I'm actually going to tell this quick anecdote because I actually think it's so topical right now. I heard this whole, our election is coming up, our federal election, and they did a whole report about how the percentage increase of women in all political parties was huge. Like, every party has increased gender parity by X percent, like, blah, blah, blah. They have this mandate that they had to prove that they looked for female and diverse candidates. It's looking so great. Like, even the Conservative Party, like, they've increased by X percentage, right? So to the general public who is like, you know what, I don't know that much about math, I'm going to just trust the numbers, that looks really good. But when you actually look a little bit further at the next concept, which is probability, which is, again, a simple elementary school concept that most people just balk at, they hear it and they're like, ah, it's so fucked up. They showed that in every riding that they put a female candidate, it was a riding where there was the probability was so low of her winning. So, like, they would put, okay, the Conservative Party has a new female candidate, but she's in a liberal riding. So that riding is going to go liberal. She will never win. She'll never make it into the actual party. But what is such a simple math concept, because people can't dig deeper into it, or they think they can't understand it. They don't know the actual facts, which is that actually there will be no more females represented in our government at the end of the election. So, like, these are all concepts that, again, they're simple concepts, but many of us got stuck on them when we were younger and never revisited them again, but they actually make an appearance in our adult lives all the time. So it's kind of a book for, you know, kids who struggle with those topics, but also adults to be like, you know what, fuck it. I am going to figure out, I'm finally going to just learn this. I'm going to go calculate that tip with my friends. I'm going to actually read the news and understand what they're saying, because again, like, there's a lot of studies that that show that, like, women in finances, for example, they don't feel confident in making financial decisions. A lot of females don't feel confident going into entrepreneurship because they their lack of confidence with math. But all of the math is, like, elementary school math. You don't need, like, calculus to run a business or to, like, do your taxes, right? So that was the whole vibe.
I'm laughing because just last night I was like stressing about, like, business finances, and I was sitting there thinking, I'm good at money. What was my mantra? I was like trying to meditate on this mantra, and it was all numbers, right? I'm good at money. I spend and save money well. I don't remember. It was like 12:30 and I was half asleep, but trying to, like, allay my anxiety. It's what I do. But all of these things, because I do come to money and numbers with so much baggage. So, yeah, I just think what you're doing is revolutionary.
Oh my God.
Tell me. Okay. So I have this question, and I just jotted it down, and I think we've touched on it, but I want to get really explicit about it. Yeah. Is yours a feminist approach to math?
Okay. So I think that's a great question, because I think it can mean a million things. So I think my approach to math is feminist because of my definition of feminism, which is that it strives to create equality and encourage accessibility. So I would say yes, 100%. Again, like, I think it's really interesting because people are confused by the fact that I say I have a feminist approach to math, or that I even think it's a feminist issue. But again, at the root of it, it is all about equal opportunity for every single person. And if you look at the way math is taught now, it is taught for a very specific learner. It is taught and created in a systemic way by a very particular set of people. And it is anti-feminist. It is exclusive. So I think, yes, it's 100% a feminist approach to math, because especially what I do at The Math Guru, which is my tutoring studio, is the idea is, as soon as you walk in the door, you are capable of math. It does not matter who you are. So I really think that that is counter to the like consistent societal narratives about math, which are, no, you are innately born a certain way. And usually the people who are born that way are males. So I'll get calls from parents who'll be like, you know, I have this son, he's getting an 80 in math, and he's just, you know, he's naturally just so good at it. He could work a little harder to get better marks, but he's got it. My daughter, she's getting a 90, but she has to work so hard. It just doesn't come to her naturally. And you're like, what the fuck are you saying? Like, so I really think we have this narrative that, like, you are born with it or you're not. And it is often the guys that are assumed to be born with it. And, like, also too, like, you see this play out with kids themselves. So guys are overly confident in their math abilities. I'll have guys who are getting like a 40 in math, and they'll be like, yeah, like, I got this. And a girl will be getting a 90, and she'll be like, I just don't really know what's going on. Like, you know what I mean? So we're really taught, like, the popular narrative is that men are born with the innate ability. So I think just approaching it in a way that demonstrates and, like, really explains that every single person is equal in their capabilities of doing math is a feminist approach. Sorry, that was a really long answer to your question.
I love long answers. All of my questions have been like 15 minutes long. It's me just like having math therapy with you. So so please elaborate as much as you'd like. Okay. So I was looking at pictures of your tutoring space, and it's described as a boutique tutoring space. And one of my favorite things is it says something like, the description says something like, every place that we've learned math has been smelly. Why is that? And, like, you have, like, incense, and, like, it's lovely and it smells good there. Okay. So I say that, and I mention that because I think even that is a feminist approach, is to make a really, like, wholehearted environment that's catered to learning.
So this is actually an interesting one, because I've obviously designed The Math Guru, like, just as per my personality, right? So, like, there, it's really pretty here. Like, I care about details. Like, there are flowers everywhere. Like, yeah, we make tea lattes. And what's funny is a lot of parents, especially at the beginning when I was new, would be like, are boys allowed here? This seems like a feminine place. And I was like, oh my God, like this is fucked up because, and there's a lot of pink like in my logo and whatever. Like, again, I did not design it as per any gender norms. That's just what I like and it is my place. Mm-hmm. So I make a very big point of questioning people who say that kind of stuff to me and to be like, sorry, what's feminine about it? Like, what exactly? And I like them to be like, well, it's nice or it's pink, and to be like, mm-hmm, and right. So I think like even the idea that we have a holistic nurturing approach, maybe traditionally feminine in like, you know, a hegemonic way or like a heteronormative way, but like that's nothing. That's neither here nor there. It is just an accessible approach. It's like, I know teenagers and I know myself, and I know that they learn better when things are nice and they smell good, like, and they have tea. So like really, again, yes, it's feminist because it's accessible. It's not feminist because it's pink and there are flowers, like, you
absolutely
know.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Thing. So like, I think that's kind of like a big thing about it is it's a unique environment that actually is accessible to teenagers and to kids, which our education system is not. Again, it is inaccessible.
It's sterile. Nobody wants to learn in a nasty desk that's, you know,
with gum under it.
Yeah. And somebody's farting in front of you and there's like spitballs. I went to public school. So like, this is what my school's like.
And as you know, like I failed. So, and this is the crazy part. I failed math twice at this school that's around the corner from me, and I tutor all their students, which is so funny. And what changed the game for me is my parents sent me to an alternative school. It was like, at the time, there were 100 kids in the class and it was pure hippie vibes. We called teachers by their first names. It smelled good. Like, it was in an office building. It wasn't. And that's what changed everything for me. And I was like, oh my God, like, I don't understand how we are so, well, I do understand because it's just systemic bullshit, but like how we just keep kids in these places where it's very clear. If you looked at any research, obviously it would show that that is not how kids learn best. And that is actually why I took a marketing approach. That's why I started a business. Like, I have a marketing degree and I always am fascinated by the fact that, like, you know, if we were selling a product, like if I was a company and I was like, school is what I'm going to sell, I would do market research. I would have focus groups. I would try to cater my product to the target audience. But schools, like public education, is a monopoly, right? They don't have to do shit. They don't have to sell anything. Kids have to go to school. So they don't care. It's like so counterintuitive. They don't care what their target audience needs at all. They're just going to provide whatever they feel like. And it's like, that is so messed up. That's not how any organization who is actually competing for an audience would ever act.
Yeah. And they're just children. And so, you know, they don't matter. I think that's another thing too, is we don't give kids the respect that they absolutely deserve as, you know, small humans who are going to grow up in this world and change it.
Well, absolutely. But then, like, and not to go on a crazy ass rant, but then we have the whole issue of privatized education where that is what they do. So mm-hmm. if you pay for it, you can get the product you want, which obviously, again, totally inaccessible. Like, you're favoring a certain audience. Like, it's just really messed up.
Mm-hmm. But the environment that you're creating is comfortable. It's nurturing. And I think that it's motivation for kids to want to go. Like, I can imagine that, you know, if your tutors are anything like you, like, you're really warm and really fun to be around and make math fun.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and that's like what I try to do is hire a diverse range of tutors. So it's like the whole, you can't be what you can't see, right? Like, I want to have representatives from every single group and like every single walk of life. And like, some of our tutors are musicians and some of them are athletes and some of them are like computer science nerds, like whatever, right? Like, so yes, 100%, like, kids want to be here. And the other thing that I think is really important is they take pride in being here, so that, because part of my whole thing is changing the culture around math so it is more accessible. And that really starts at the grassroots level, right? So having young girls being proud of working hard and getting good grades and being mathematically capable is like a huge, huge part of what we do. Like, getting them on Instagram, like getting them to show off about this stuff instead of like hiding the fact that they're smart because they think it competes with their femininity.
So, or hiding the fact that they need help.
Or hiding the fact that they need help because it's embarrassing. Actually, what's funny, I think this is really interesting, is girls actually don't really hide the fact that they need help because they are taught to be victims and they're taught to be incapable of that. They're very happy to say they need help. Guys, on the other hand, are so embarrassed. And that's what I really love here too. We have a ton of male students who are role models who I'll be like, let me post your grade on Instagram. And they'll be like, all right. Like, and I think they're doing a real big service to all the fucking bros out there to be like, yeah, I need help. And I went and I got it. And I'm not innately capable of math. I'm not a fucking math genius. Well, I'm not, yes, they are innately capable, but like they weren't born knowing the quadratic formula. They worked for it. And like, I think that's just as feminist as any of the women, right? Is that the culture around masculinity to show that like, you don't have to just get it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's so good. That's so good. So let's shift gears a little bit and talk about your brand new podcast. You sent me like an all caps email earlier this week that was like, my podcast just launched. And I'm so excited. I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet, but tell me all about it. What are you excited about? What is it called? What are you doing with it? What are your goals for it? All the things.
Okay. Well, yeah. And then maybe like, I mean, you already have this dope ass podcast. So you're probably like, hey, calm down.
Absolutely not. No, this is amazing. No, this is what I did a major blitz when this launched too. I was like, look, everybody come listen.
So my podcast is called Math Therapy and it is based on the entire idea that over the past like decade, I have learned that really I'm more of a math therapist than a teacher. And that's what we do here. So the whole idea of math therapy is that we all, every single one of us, especially people who profess to not be able to do math, have a math trauma from which this whole like mythical notion stems from. And that many adults, many women, are kind of like, yeah, yeah, I can never do math, whatever, it's cool, I don't need it anymore. But I like to point out the idea that you ever thought that about yourself, the idea that you had this math trauma has held you back in your life in so many ways. So I always say, I don't give a shit if you go into math or science. I really don't. What I care about is that you as a human, whoever you are, do not go through this life thinking that there is this thing that you're incapable of. And for many people, that thing was math. Now, if you decide at whatever age you are that you're incapable of doing math, you have now decided that there's something on the planet you can't do no matter what. That means the next time you face an obstacle, you're going to be like, huh, I wonder if this is just another thing I can't do. And for me, failing grade 11 math twice and then acing it because of like a whole range of factors, because I kept trying, because I had a change of mindset, that changed me into a person who truly believes I can do anything. So like, as a quick example, like honestly, like a year after I fucking aced math, I was like, what else can I do? Like, I'm going to start a band. Now I've always wanted to be Lady Gaga, as you know, and I've like been kicked out of Canadian Idol auditions, like whatever. I started a band and after my first show, this man comes up to me after my first show and he goes, I just wanted to let you know you were the worst singer I've ever heard in my entire life. And honestly, had I not had that entire experience with math, I might've been like, oh, well maybe this isn't for me. And I was like, okay, I'll take singing lessons. And 8 years later, my band opened for Bon Jovi at the Air Canada Center. So like, oh my God. Yeah, but it's like, that's why I'm so hell bent, especially on showing women that they need to get rid of this mindset. They need to go back into their math trauma, figure out what it was, unpack it and get rid of it, because that changes your entire like sense of self-worth and confidence. Oh my God. Okay. Anyways, so that is what it's about. And so every single episode, I have a different guest. I have guys, I have girls, I have people who liked math, I have people who hated it. And we unpack A, their math traumas, and B, like I have a therapist on one of them talking about the math traumas she sees in her patients without even really realizing it. So like, it's an empowering podcast. It's like a self-help podcast. We don't do any math. It's about like listeners investigating their relationship with math and how that might have actually like affected them more than they know.
I can't wait to listen. So. Now and that you heads up. Say that again.
A lot of swearing. So
oh, so
it's warning to the listeners.
Yeah. I mean, it's right up my alley.
Yeah.
So you have Math Hacks, you have the podcast, or you're diving into more of like the self-help part of math. I love this math mindset. Do you think you'll continue writing?
So I love that I feel like we didn't even talk about this. So this is kind of actually, I feel like this is maybe you're gonna give me therapy now.
Okay.
So, I actually do. So the funny part of all of this is writing is definitely the thing for me that's overwhelming. Like where I'm very close to having that. Like I've had the mindset before where I'm like, I'm not a writer. I can't write. Like that's the thing for me. Like I freeze up. And that's why I actually did my master's degree, because I was like, I don't think I can do it. And I need to prove to myself I can. And it was like the hardest thing for me. So I know I can write. I have written, but it's funny because that still comes up for me. And yes, like I want to write so many books. Like I have all these books I want to write. And I'm actually supposed to be working on a proposal for a book right now. And I have been avoiding it because I'm like, oh my God, like this is so difficult for me. And then at the same time being like, Vanessa, you don't believe that stuff. Like you need to not talk to yourself that way. So it's kind of like a funny thing, but yes, 1,000,000%. The next book I want to write is a self-help book. I have the idea. I can't like divulge, but that is like my big thing. I really do want to get more into the self-help world. I feel like that's really my strength. And I feel like I have a lot to share in that area. So I have like 1,000,000 self-help books I want to write, but I have one that I'm like, it's in me now. It's ready to come out. That's going to be like, I think my thing. Like I really want to be like the Tony Robbins with like a meth spin.
Yeah. And like less rapey.
Is he rapey?
Yeah, he's a little rapey.
What do you mean?
Has been accused of a lot of like sexual manipulation and
what? No.
Yeah.
Fuck, that sucks. I really liked him. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Now that I'm like double thinking it, I don't want to get, I mean, I imagine that people that famous are probably like really litigious. So I don't.
Well, you can look it up for the show.
Look that up for the show notes. Yeah. Now I'm, yeah. Or but I'm pretty sure, I don't know. He always put a bad taste in my mouth. He's like kind of toxic masculine. So anyways.
Well, also too, with something like Tony Robbins, like, okay, because I've been really obsessed right now with all these like Rachel Hollis and Gabby Bernstein. Do you know these people?
Rachel Hollis is trash. Gabby Bernstein kind of sucks. Continue.
Right. Okay. But I'm obsessed because I'm like, they have a cult following. Like,
yeah.
I'm more obsessed on that level of like, I'm really into investigating it. I even went to an MLM meeting the other day.
Oh man.
For market research. Like I was like, I need to see, because Rachel Hollis is like a huge MLM person, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so I was like, I want to see what's going on. And I'm just fascinated. Like, I'm like, what is going on? So with Tony Robbins, bringing it back, I think, I think part of my fascination is I've always been obsessed with cults, number one.
I'm obsessed with cults. This has come up several times. Yes. Continue.
Okay. Like I'm obsessed, right? Like I'm like, how does this happen? Like how, like I'm just like so fascinated by it. So maybe that's why, because I watched The Not Your Guru. This is how it all started with Tony Robbins. And I was like, how do you have this crazy following? And then like looking at Rachel Hollis and Gabby Bernstein's followers, I'm like, what is going on? Like I've read the books. They're fine, whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't know that any of that is worthy of a cult following. Mm-hmm. Like, I just like, so anyways, I think maybe it's not like I'm like, oh my God, I have huge respect for these people. Not that I don't, like whatever. Everyone's doing their thing. Fine, do whatever you want. I'm more like obsessed with the cult mentality. We're talking 1,000,000+ people for each of these people. Like 1,000,000 people on the planet are like literally worshiping them.
Yeah, I just Googled Tony Robbins was accused of... by 4 women of sexual misconduct.
Oh my God.
As just in May.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Ew. Okay. I'm going to have to look this up. Also, side note, you can delete this, but I need to know, have you watched Wild Wild Country?
No. What is that?
Oh my God. What? I need to talk to someone about this because it's the Osho documentary on Netflix. It's a 6-part documentary. It's a cult thing. He was like a cult leader from India. My friend was like, you need to watch it. It is crazy. Okay. Like he starts a cult and they end up literally moving to Portland. Okay. They move to Portland and they start a full city, their own city. They take over this entire town in Portland called Antelope and turn it into like Rajneeshpuram. And like, and it's their, it's so, the problem is they don't really get into the cult. Like there's some stuff, but I just, okay, never mind if you haven't watched it, but like.
No, sounds right in my alley.
You might be into it because it's like, how does this happen? Like,
yeah.
I just, anyways. Okay. I've always wondered if I could be brainwashed to be in a cult.
Like, well, and I think that's why I'm like obsessed with it, because I feel like I would be susceptible to that. Like, for sure. Like,
yeah, me too. I get really, I get really into things. Me too.
Like just the one wrong turn, I'm a Scientologist, you know?
Oh my God. So the crazy thing is when I was younger, I went to the Church of Scientology with my friends to take one of the surveys, because we were like, this will be funny. And they told me after the survey that I had the potential to be a leader of Scientology. And I was like, I could see myself being a cult leader. Yeah. I could see it. But I feel like I need to like harness the power for good. Everyone read my self-help book.
I have no idea how much of that we're going to keep because
yeah, that's fine.
It's hilarious though. And we might just keep all of it. Okay. So here, I wrote down two notes because I want to circle back to your writing fear. First off, the proposal is the hardest part. The proposal is essentially the outline of everything. So yes, you're going to struggle writing that. Secondly, nobody likes writing. Everybody likes having written.
Is that true though?
I talk to a lot of authors. Yes. I think that there are some.
A lot better actually.
Some authors sit down at their computer every morning and just, that's like their favorite part of the day. That's rare. I think most people, it's like pulling teeth 95% of the time. I was just listening. You should go, speaking of Taylor Swift, you should watch her Tiny Desk concert, her NPR Tiny Desk concert, because she makes this point that there are some songs to her that just pour out. And it's that's great, but then more likely they are like pulling teeth. Like you just have to develop the discipline to do it. So
well, I definitely relate to that as being in a band. That's exactly mm-hmm. how, right? Like it's like sometimes a song just pours out and I'm like, holy shit. But yeah, most of the time I'm like, oh, like I don't know, like what's the hook? Blah. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. So I do get that. Okay, well that is actually a pretty good pep talk because I was like, all right, yeah. That does seem like the idea of like putting the thoughts in your body and brain and like your whole heart into like the perfect words would be like so hard to do.
Oh, and you have to have a shitty first draft too.
Yeah.
That's how I just like when I was writing my dissertation, it was just, what am I trying to say here? And I would write it in just the way I speak and then go back and edit it to sound scholarly.
I think that's it. I have to do that. And I know I'm in a place where because I've been so hooked on the self-help book and like talking to people and taking notes, I think I worked it up too much in my head that I'm like scared to even start because I'm like, it has to be perfect. And that's why I was like, you know what? I'm taking a week off even thinking about it. And then I'm going to go and just start writing because like I've built it up too much and I'm prejudging my, like everything. I do mm-hmm. it with self-writing too. I start like something will start coming out of my mouth and I'll be like, is that a good hook? And I'm like, you can't write like that. Like you need to just start.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because you can always go back and edit.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, this was wonderful. So we're coming up on the end here.
Oh my God, really?
I know. Can you imagine? Like they fly by. So we always ask, if you have a book to recommend that's not your own, tell me, what would you recommend? Oh, she's holding up Mindy Kaling. I love it.
Okay. So Why Not Me by Mindy Kaling was actually the first book I read years ago where I was like, maybe I will write a book. Like I've always kind of been like, I'm going to end up writing all these books, like blah, blah, blah. But I never had an idea. But when I read Mindy Kaling's book, I was like, I love the format of it. I love that it's like a memoir, but it's like short essays. Like, first of all, that's really my style. Like I like short, whatever, but also like, God, I just fucking love that girl, you know? And anyways, she has this whole part in the book where she talks about she was really shocked when she did the Mindy Project because she started getting all these letters from women being like, thank you so much for showing me a character who has not sacrificed her femininity to be in science, right? And like, there's a whole chapter on that. I thought that was so cool. And I just want to be her best friend. And she's going to play me in my Netflix series. I just know it one day. And you should read that book. Yay. And both of her books are great, but I like Why Not Me the best.
And she's got a third one coming out.
Oh my God, really?
It will be an Amazon exclusive though.
Oh.
So yeah, you have to, yeah, Amazon has done some deal with her where it's either Audible only or Amazon exclusive, whatever, but she's working on a third one with Amazon. Okay. So keep an eye out for that. Great. Have you seen Late Night yet?
No, what's that? Is that her new show?
It's her movie that she wrote for Emma Thompson and she stars in it with Emma Thompson.
Okay, but wait, is it on Netflix?
I think it's on Amazon.
Okay, I
think she is just rolling in some Amazon dollars is what she's doing.
What's going on? Okay, hold on. I actually really want to watch it like today. Okay, what is it called?
Late Night. I think it's called Late Night.
I'm literally in my notes right now.
It's about The first female late night talk show host.
Oh my God. What?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to watch it. I'm going to go get a pedicure today. I'm watching.
Living your best life.
Okay, great.
Okay. So where can we find you online if we want to connect with you and learn more about you?
Okay. So everything at The Math Guru, and Instagram's like my preferred. I still like can't seem to get people to really enjoy what I'm saying on Twitter. I mean, I would love to, but like, I just don't think I have what it takes in 140 characters. So at The Math Guru, my podcast is Math Therapy. You can find it anywhere. And like themathguru.ca if you want to check out my website. But yeah, that's, and my band is Goodnight Sunrise. You can find us every single place you listen to music. Could really use those Spotify followers. So yeah, it's at GNSR Band. But if you just type in Goodnight Sunrise, you'll find me.
Amazing. I will link all of that in the show notes, along with Math Hacks, your book, along with Why Not Me by Mindy Kaling. Any shows or movies that we've mentioned, they will all be in the show notes.
Tony Robbins articles.
Oh God. No, you can just Google that. I Googled Tony Robbins sexual misconduct, I think, and that's what came up. So anyways, thank you so much for joining me. This was such a delight.
Thank you so much. Honestly, and I really want to say thank you for including this on your podcast, because I think it's really important to be talking about math in a feminist way. And it's hard to get people on board with that. So thank you for jumping on board and for giving it a shot. And I honestly think it's going to make a big difference.
Oh, me too. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to today's show. As always, a rating and review in the podcast app of your choice goes a long way in supporting feminist media. We'd love to have you join the Feminist Book Club subscription box, a community-driven subscription box which features a book of the month and products from women and queer-owned businesses delivered directly to your doorstep. This is an easy way to vote with your dollars, as you'll be supporting this podcast, small women and queer-owned businesses, and the charity beneficiary of the month, which receives 5% of total sales. Use code PODCAST for a discount on any subscription package. Learn more about the box and get the show notes for today's episode at feministbookclub.com. See you next time.
A well-read woman is a dangerous creature.